Hey everybody, bienvenido a Las Caras Lindas podcast, the podcast on Blackness in Latin America. This is a new project that was born out of me and some friends meeting over an event last year during the pandemic, and we wanted to continue this conversation, especially now during Hispanic Heritage Month. My name is Yolanda Santiago Correa.
Hey everyone, my name is Andres de Arco.
Hola a todos, I'm Esperanza Jean.
Hola a todos, I'm Nora de Arco.
What's up, people? It's Gessner Josue Perea. Excited to be here.
And we're here together to talk about what is Afrolatinidad. ¿Qué exactamente esto de Afrolatinidad? ¿Por qué es importante hablar de esto, especialmente durante el mes de la herencia hispana? Esto es un tema que ha agarrado mucha... A lot of popularity in the last couple of years, and we've had a lot of opinions and a lot of conversations. But us coming from the context that we are coming from, which you'll hear a little bit more during this conversation, we wanted to talk about what is it important. So, Afrolatinidad, ¿qué es esto?
Well, the thing is just, you know, I think that, you know, I always like to say when we talk about Afrolatinidad that I think we need to understand that it's already, right, we always say this, Latinidad is a pan-ethnic term, right? So already includes many different ethnicities, many different groups of people in there. But the problem that we have is that there's still anti-Blackness within Latinidad, right? So then we need a term like Afro-Latinidad to emphasize and to highlight the specific contributions of people of African descent to the Latino, Latina, Latine, Latinx consciousness, right? And so I think that that's something that's really important. I think that the term really becomes important for us as a unifying, you know, as a unifying term, right? Like all of us here in this call, many of us are from different places. You know, we're all from different regions. People listening to us are from different regions. But what unites us is being of African descent, right? And having that African, that Africanity that's part of the of Latinidad, right? And I think that's important. So I think that, you know, what is Afro-Latinidad is a big question, right? So it was like, what is Afro-Latino? What does that mean? Who is Afro-Latino? How do we consider those people? And then, you know, there's the whole thing about, do we call it Latin? Are we okay with the term Latinx, Latina, Latinx? Are we okay with that? And so I think that it always begins those conversations. But I think what the main emphasis of it is to give visibility and representation to people of African descent, right? Because it's people of African descent who oftentimes within the Latino consciousness, the Latino hue, are ignored or pushed to the side, right? And so our needs are not as addressed as other needs are, whether in the U.S., or in all of Latin America, right? Mi papá es de Chocó, y en el Chocó es la región más negra de Colombia, una de las regiones más negras en Colombia, y pero todavía una de las más pobres en Colombia. And so those are those kind of connections that I think that the term starts to highlight, that there is a specific experience for people who are Latino, Latinx, Latine, and who are of African descent. And I think that's important to highlight.
Y yo creo que también es importante hablar de esa diferencia de dónde exactamente viene latino, que lo que tú dijiste, un término, like a term that's in wanting to be an umbrella, pero que a veces no necesariamente, o no a veces, prácticamente siempre no hace justicia a la experiencia de todas las personas que están siendo puestas debajo de esa sombrilla. Especially when we start thinking about the difference between Latino, which is a geographical term, and then Hispano, which is a linguistic term. Y sí, para mí es por eso es que es importante hablar de esto, porque a veces no tenemos la especificidad de expresar qué exactamente es la experiencia individual. Y como tú mencionaste, Josué, todos nosotros viniendo de lugares diferentes, de países diferentes, I think Afro-Latinx or Afro-Latine, even starting the conversation with using a term like that, I think talks a little bit more to deconstruct the idea that there's this like unifying pan-ethnic experience that can really talk to all of our experience across all of the 20 plus nations across Latin America.
Yeah, and to piggyback off of some of that stuff, it says it is really this term of remembering, right? There's a lot of erasure that happened within Latin America of the Blackness, right? Uno tenía que mejorar la raza, you had to really, you know, make sure that your grandmother was Black, but then like 2-3 generations, people get lighter, right? So I think Afro-Latinidad for me is really reclaiming my roots, right? So yo también tengo mi abuela, que es Chocana también, You know my dad from Maria La Baja, very proudly so. It was a town of palenqueros, of freed African slaves, and my mother from Buenaventura. So there's really all this Blackness inside of me. We contribute so much to the culture, to the dance, to the joy. It was just in 1993, I believe, that Colombia recognized Afro-Latinos, right? That's how old I am. I'm 27, that's 27 years ago. So yeah, for me, it's about reclaiming and really remembering those roots of where that came from the slaves. So yeah, I think that's where I stand with that. And sometimes I feel like I claim that the Blackness more than Latinidad sometimes, because I'm like, see, because like you guys were saying, that the Latinos sometimes forget about the Black people in within our own stuff. So
I just want to say real quick, I did not know that Nora and Andres were from the three heavy hitting Black regions of Colombia. They got Palenque, Chocuano, and Buenaventura. Oh, I can't mess with them. That's like Black royalty in Colombia.
Okay, so we Blackity Black, okay?
I thought I was Black. I'm not that Black.
Te ganaron. No, pero es bien interesante que tú mencionas lo de 1993, Nora, porque en Puerto Rico recientemente hubo un movimiento bien grande para el censo que se hizo el 2020, para que hubiera la oportunidad de la gente identificarse, o que ellos mismos, aunque no hubiera la oportunidad como tal escrita, pusieran afrodescendiente como categoría, y causó un revuelo grandísimo, porque de hace 10 años atrás, I think, what it said, like more than 80% of Puerto Rico's population was white, which is not true. Porque la gente pues.
¿A dónde? ¿Desde cuándo?
Pero pues si tienen la opción de blanco o negro.
80%. ¿Sabes? Okay.
Pero eso mismo de que si tú tienes la opción de blanco o negro, por eso mismo de todos estos términos, que entonces van dentro de la pregunta de why is it important to talk about it. No, o sea, estamos indoctrinados a decir, pues soy blanco, porque es mejor ser blanco que ser negro. Es toda esta internalized racism and idea. Pero un movimiento bien grande de muchos grupos, like grassroots movements en Puerto Rico, y de la nada, it jumped, and like the government was super surprised. It's like, oh, there's suddenly a bunch of Black people or Afro-descendant people in Puerto Rico. And I'm like, no, it's not suddenly. It's always been there. Es que nunca hemos querido reconocer that this is the reality of the island. And so it's interesting that you mentioned that, because I had no idea, Nora.
And Mexico just did that. Like Mexico, I think was 2 years ago, that Mexico just decided to recognize. So like, if we look at those movements, and I think Esperanza is going to say something, sorry, Esperanza, but if we look at those movements real quickly, I think that you see that there's always been this denial of admitting that Blackness is a part of the national consciousness, right? It's like, no. And it's like, okay, I guess we can deny it. So sure, vamos a incluirlos, right? And so like, what we always say, like in South America, when you look at the soccer teams, you know, oh, okay, that percentage of that country then is blacker than people think. But it takes a long time for that recognition to come. Mexico was just 2 years ago. Colombia was 93. Some of the Southern American countries in the south of South America haven't even done it. So it's you know, that's an interesting thing there.
Yeah, and I think on top of that, the term Afro-Latino might be new, but I think also recognizing that Blackness in Latin America is not new at all. Like this thing that whether government entities decide to acknowledge it, like this is an experience that has been lived for generations on generations. So I think like even on top of like the naming of it, of Afro-Latino and however we wanna identify that to be and however we wanna claim that to be, I think even on top of that, there's a whole history that has been lived that hasn't been acknowledged or hasn't even been talked about. So I think that also goes into part of that legacy of being Afro-Latino, Afro-Latina. So.
And I think, pensando sobre lo que tú estás diciendo, André, entonces, in terms of like, mira, combinando español e inglés, ya tú sabes, in terms of history, you know, where there is so much more to la experiencia de ser negra en Latinoamérica that is not within the last, what, 3 years, 3-4 years of, como puedo decir, como internet, social media conversations, y discusiones y cosas así. What comes to mind for me en la realidad de, like, I'm pausing so much, aún tratando de hablar porque estoy pensando de tanta cosa que está enredado en esto. Like, there's just so much, like, in terms of en el pasado, ahora mismo, in terms of en de qué país estamos hablando, in terms of, you know, entre cuál generación, in terms of, like, between generations, you know, as to, I guess, really the conflict. I think that's the theme of all the things running through my head. I think having this conversation is tan importante porque hay tanto, there's so much conflict internally and interpersonally, not only throughout the region of Latin America, but then also the diaspora. There are plenty of us who are not currently living within Latin America, even though we may be from there or our parents are from there, you know, and our experience of that, you know, social conflicts changes depending on where we're at.
But I want to highlight something that Andres said. It's really good to say that it's a lived experience that has been around for a long time. I think that people have always said, like, I think Andres said something very specific that I was fighting with someone last summer, right after our conversation. I literally, they were like, when does this start? And I was like, it doesn't really have a date. I can't tell you like a date. And they were like, no, it has to start somewhere. I'm like, but it's a lived experience, right? Like, there are many people, right? San Martin de Porres is, we would consider Afro-Latino, and is one of the only Black saints in America. But he's, so his experience is an Afro-Latino experience, whether it was named that, right? So, like, there are so many different experiences that I think that goes to what Esperanza was saying about that struggle, right? Because there has been an internal struggle for people to self-recognize as Black, right? Why is that? Because there's been an anti-Blackness, because there's been erasure, because there's been these things. So I think that's such an important thing, because the lived experience part really connects us to a long lineage of the diaspora, right? Just different Afro-Latinos, different people of African descent in what is now known as Latin America that have always fought for the rights of different people. And I think that's such a, I thought that was a really great point, because the lived experience part is really more important than say, when does this thing begin? Because it's really been around for a long time.
No, Ike, algo like you said, like even before we had a category, in the effort that we have to categorize everything and anything, ya eso existía. Y para muchas de estas personas que tú mencionas, y pensando pues, en mi contexto en Puerto Rico, pensé en Pedro Albizu Campo, en Roberto Clemente, all of these figures, que su negritud era parte de su identidad y de su manera de actuar en el mundo antes de que hubiera all of these terms of Afro-Latinidad and all of these discussions about, you know, colorism, which is also something that comes very heavily into this conversation, and the meaning of living in a Black body en un contexto que idolatra el mestizaje, la idea de que todos somos mezclados. So that's also really interesting, because like you said, it traces back to something that, mira, tú lo quieras reconocer o no, hay una palabra para hablar de ello o no, está ahí, y todos sabemos que aunque no hablemos de ello, it's there, and it's obvious. And for those of us that identify with the experience, it's something that you know since you're born. And tu misma vida will tell you before you even have all of these academic terms to explain it or define it.
Mm-hmm. That's a great point. That's a great point. And I think in my case, I'm not in love with the term Afro-Latino or Afro-Latina or Latinx. But for me, it's provided somewhat of a name that I could use to define some of my experiences. Like, for example, like, it's sometimes it's hard for me to like truly like, or like candidly explain why I don't want to like hang out with like certain Latino groups. Like, I'm just now here in Boston, for example, and people Boston. Say, oh, there's a large, yeah, in Boston, people will tell me, oh, there's a large Colombian population in Boston. But in my experience, like, people telling me that there's a lot of Colombians in Boston is not, it doesn't connect with me as much as like, oh, there's a lot of Puerto Ricans or there's a lot of Dominicans. And why? Because like the majority of Colombians that, at least that I've come across, have been people that we would, at least in Colombia, like consider white, which brings up another dilemma with the term Afro-Latino, with a term like Latino has been like so homogenizing, and now Afro-Latino, now it forces you to relate it to something. Like if you are Afro-Latino, then what am I? And so then we get into conversations about whiteness that I don't think get translated as much here in the United States, where like in Colombia, for example, it was funny for me to like reflect that a lot of people are considered white. Like we just openly name people white that we wouldn't name. So here in the United States, like a lot of these artists, a lot of the people that we come across, and at least like in these very like Black regions in Colombia, like we'll just like, oh, this person is white, or this, or even like certain phrases. It's like, oh, this, like, si usted está diciendo huevón, like huevón o parce or stuff like that, that's more associated with like wider communities in Colombia. And so it comes with so many dynamics that I think the term, to some extent, you identify it with it, but sometimes you also struggle with it.
It goes back to the stuff that earlier, this is our lives, this is our lived experience. And in our context, for me, we came to the US young, it was hard to kind of even identify yourself, right? Because there's certain groups of Latinos that I vibe with, and certain groups that I really don't feel that I identify with, but I share the same language with, so I am accepted. But take the language away and I am not accepted, right? Because I am then Black, and you know, you can't mix with Black people like that as Latinos. So yeah, it's very different to see that because of where I was born in, and it helps that I speak the language, that I am accepted by other Latinas as Latinas, but I feel that I am accepted because of my Latinidad, but not because of my Blackness. My Blackness is not always accepted to Latinos. It's kind of like excused and allowed, but it's not like, you know, to me, it's like, okay, well, she's cool because she's not like Black. She's one of us.
Yeah, so there's all these definitions about what Blackness is or is not. Y Latino es como una manera de soften the blow for many people. And even when you're talking about language, a mí lo que me hace pensar es, you know, I'm lighter skinned and my experience is very different because I didn't come as a child. So a lot of my shocks with how the US understands race for Latinos came me being 21 in the middle of North Carolina and the Trump election, which is a conversation for another day, right? Pero para mí, a lot of the struggles, I can relate to the language thing, pero para mí es porque it was always the, oh, es que el español de ustedes los puertorriqueños. Like the first time I went on a trip to Mexico, alguien was like, oh, tú hablas como Nicky Jam, that's so cute. And I was like, what? But it's this idea que el español, que yo creo que con nosotros cinco una experiencia universal, que del lugar o del español que nosotros estamos hablando is not even the Spanish. Like we have the language, but we don't even have the language. Porque, o sea, ahora mismo lo que estoy diciendo, why don't you say por qué? Like, why are you changing this for this? Like, why do you sound like that? Like, that's not proper Spanish. You're not speaking correctly. And then this also comes into conversation because I think like Andres mentioned with certain terms, it depends the country that you're coming from, the area. Que aún en el español hay una distinción y una jerarquía entre quien habla mejor o peor español, which is often very much connected to race and how that version of Spanish interacted with African dialects and other things like that.
Oh yeah, no, I think it's completely tied to that. I think what Noda highlights is really good. I remember in my undergrad, I was the only person. I went to City College of New York. It's a good school here in New York. It's a public school. And I was the only person. I didn't know anyone. So I just thought to hang out with the Colombians because I'm Colombian. Let's go hang out with the Colombians. I recognize the accent, even though I don't have the accent. And I remember that the Colombians wouldn't talk to me. Like, they were like, we're not talking to you. So then one point, one of them like got really brave and was like, why do you sit here with us, man? Like, why are you sitting here? And I was like, oh, because I'm Colombian, like y'all. Like, I just thought like we could talk, you know, I don't know anyone in the school. Mm-hmm. And they were like, well, are you really Colombian? And then they go through the questions of like, you know, me having to prove my Colombianness, right? So like, it was like, where were you born? Who, when did you come? Where were you born? Were you, what, it got to like, what hospital are you born? What town did your, what barrio does your family live in Bogota? Meanwhile, none of these people knew anything because none of, most of them were not born in Colombia. So it, for me, it's interesting how they were, for them, the Colombian identity is easily given to them, right? They were white, they had an accent, that over mine, because, you know, the accent that's considered Colombian is really from one or two regions, doesn't mean that there's a one Colombian accent, I have a different Colombian accent. So then now I was like, oh, so, which is fine, it's just, I was like, oh, so you weren't born in Colombia, but I'm not Colombian, I had to prove that I was Colombian. And that had to be on race, right? It's definitely completely race. And it was really interesting to me. And I remember I was like, you know what? I don't want to hang out with you anyway because I, you know, you're not what I thought you were. And I agree with Andres. I get uncomfortable in sometimes these you know cosmological Latino spaces. Like I do. I get like I'm like I don't feel like I fit here. And I'm like, I don't really want to be here. And I'm like, I'd rather go. Let me go hang out with, you know, people of African descent, right? Like, I'd rather go to like the Juvert party or whatever that's happening here over another thing because I get less questions, right? It's like, it's just easier to accept. And I think that that's a unique thing. This is why I think that like, whether however we identify or use the term of being of African descent, I think that unites us, that gives me, for example, like a greater unity than like a specific, like I'm Colombian, right? I was just in Colombia for a week and I felt more connected to my Black side of the family than to my other side of the family, just because we understand the experience. So like that part of understanding experientially is very, it's tied to me and I think that's important and it connects me. And I think I feel more connected overall to the African diaspora than I do specifically to the Latino diaspora, let's say specifically, especially how it's been revealed here in the US. I don't know why that is, it's because of experience. But that's just my experience. It's just, I think it's like, no, that like, then when I speak Spanish, they're like, oh, so you're like a cool Black person. I'm like, that's messed up though. I would just wanna be a Black person. And I think it's these things that happen. So I don't know where I was going with that, but I think it was just, I just remember that story. And it's always like earning your Latinidad. Like, I think we have to earn it. It's like, well, you have to work for it. It's like, why?
We forget that Blackness is so complex. We forget that Blackness is actually very diverse. Like, there is more complexity to Blackness than just, oh, you were born in Africa or you were born in the US. Because even I've had times with Black people that they've been like, so you're Black? Like, that happens and you can speak Spanish, but it's working from this, and I guess the word is ignorance, right? Of not knowing history. Again, so back to what Andres was saying, our history was cut, our history was erased. And so our connection to our diaspora was severed. And we have to like, you know, be like, oh, hey, yes, we exist. And there is a multitude of us and that's powerful, but we are so disconnected from that truth and from those rich histories that really were passed down through word of mouth, right? So yeah, that's what I was gonna say. Go ahead, Esperanza.
I was just gonna say, I think I could be wrong, but based on my memory, I think I'm the only one that grew up here in the States or was born and raised here in the US. Because I'm okay, I'm taking that as a yes, I remembered right. Okay, está bien. Because in hearing the tensions that, I mean, I'm hearing like a similar tension that you've each navigated when it comes to, obviously with nuance, obviously with, you know, there's differences as well, but in terms of the common piece of this layer of feeling somewhat displaced within the space of Latinidad, because of all these other, because of all these experiences around anti-Blackness. And it, and for me, it's not so much that I haven't experienced that. I have experienced that, pero para mí un poquito al revés in terms of the ratio of where, a donde yo he, you know, sentido ese like displacement, because it wasn't until, déjame ver, como cuatro, quizás cinco años, cuatro años, como adulta que yo he sentido eso como una latina cuando yo moví a California. And LA specifically. And so that's where I was, the last 4 years, esa es la primera vez que yo he estado en un lugar a donde gente me está mirando como loca porque estoy hablando español. Antes de eso, la problema que yo tenía no era tanto identificándome completamente con mi latinidad o con otro que son, tú sabes, latinos o latiné, pero era más una como complexity around being of African American descent, or not African American descent, being African American and being Dominican American, like, and being within Black and eventually more white spaces, but I would say Black and white American spaces, but mostly Black, that ellos se confundieron con me, like, what do we do with her? Like, what are the social obviously not speaking about it con ese lenguaje, pero basically I'm more used to there being questions and confusion sobre mi ser negra versus around being Latina. Like being around my, not just my Dominican family, but because we're all, well, my brother and I, we grew up pretty further away from the majority of the family porque no me crié en Nueva York, yo me crié en Detroit. Y la mayoría de nuestra familia todavía está en la isla, you know, de cualquier manera, anyway. So there's that. But I would say the communities that I grew up in that were a combination de puertorriqueño, cubano, some guatemalteco, poquito de mexicano, you know, it was a blend, but there was definitely a lot of Caribe people, you know. It was never a question. Like those were the spaces where I could breathe. Like those were the spaces where I didn't have to answer a bunch of questions. Y no era una conversación como, pero qué te pasa a ti, muchacha? Like, well, you know, what's wrong with, why do you act this way? And what's, you're not, you know, you're that Spanish girl. You're not really Black. And then como the collective consciousness around race versus ethnicity and all these other things has shifted. Then in college, it changed more so to, oh yeah, either that's the mixed girl or you're confused, you're not mixed, you know, you're just Black. Like there's nothing else going on here. You're just Black and you're confused, et cetera. And so there's this, I bring a lot of my analysis around race naturally comes from that particular experience, you know? And so it was very, it was jarring to, as I'm sure Yolanda, for you in a different sense, como adulta being in North Carolina during this crazy time and this, that, and a third, you being confronted with a different experience for me, you know, with a different thing, como adulta, being like, wait a minute, why is this? And, but at the same time, I resonate con lo que tú estás diciendo, Nora, que hablando español and I can tell as an adult looking back that growing up, a lot of the acceptance and seemingly simplicity en comunidad de Latino that I grew up in era directamente conectado a la realidad que hablo español. Y también que mi mamá es más clara que yo. Like, I get more of my color from my dad, who's African American.
No, but there's a lot of things.
There's
then,
just so many layers. Yeah.
You make me think about other people that I've talked to que tuvieron la experiencia de crecer en un contexto como New York City or Philly, you know, que usualmente las comunidades que predominan en esos lugares son caribeñas. Sí. Versus crecer en otros lugares que las comunidades latinas que predominan no son del Caribe. Y yo creo que también eso crea entonces una diferencia y unas tensiones que existen, que a veces no hablamos, between the Caribbean identity en conjunto with the Latinx identity and what that means for existing in the world. And I think too, how people who identify as Black living in the US context, cómo su experiencia está, depending on who they have around, like, are the people around you X kind of people or this kind of people? And I make that distinction porque para mí in North Carolina, you know, there's no Puerto Ricans in North Carolina. No. Los dominicanos no predominan en North Carolina. Los colombianos no predominan en North Carolina. And so, although we have talked about, and I think it's important for us to mention that there are Black Latinos in all of Latin America. It's not a Caribbean thing, which is also another thing that's often like, oh, son los boris, son los domi. No, like they're everywhere. But because that relación usualmente se hace, o si eres caribeño, that's, you're those kind of people or mm-hmm. this kind of thing. For other communities, then it that conversation, it makes it a little more complicated porque aún en eso no nos entendemos culturalmente. Like our language is not the same. And in that, we come into the conversation of how Blackness also shapes the cultures of countries. Que para mí es algo que ha sido bien interesante con la conversación que hubo en Twitter recientemente about reggaeton, which is very popular in the Caribbean, well, in Latin America in general, pero como lugar de nacimiento, Panamá, Black Panama, and then the Caribbean. Y hablamos de eso, it's heavily influenced by Black culture. It comes from Black culture, it was Black people who made it. And so it's this thing que está predominando, but that has been co-opted by certain people. And so it's almost this existence of what y'all were talking about, about we want certain portions of this, but not it in its totality. And so it becomes a little more complicated. And even for us, que existimos en contextos that talk about religion a lot and theology a lot, entonces la conversación de la iglesia se mete and it's todo otro revolú.
No, yeah, and I'm just taking in the points that were made, and it's interesting for me because on one side Latinidad is complicated and it has many layers, but on the other hand it's not as unique as sometimes I think people like to make it out to be, because at the end of the day, it's still a white supremacist system and it's set to benefit white people. And just like Jose was saying, being in a space where everybody's Colombian, but him being Black and the rest being some people who people would stereotypically see as Colombian looking, he's the one that's gonna end up with all the questions and the why are you here? And now you have to prove yourself. And so this question of who can fit comfortably in this space of Latinidad and who can't. And now why do we need this term like Afro-Latino, Afro-Latine? Why is it necessary? So I think on the one hand, like we're naming a lot of these complexities, but I think it's very much rooted in the fact that it's not unique in it being white supremacist at the end of the day. That's how it started, and that's how we're living in it and how we're trying to survive in it. And so for me, it's just been interesting to hear these different points in these different experiences.
Yeah, I think I also want to highlight, I agree. I think that the fact that it's white supremacist can go understated, right? Like, we have to acknowledge that, like, we're fighting against this, we're fighting the monster of white supremacy, right? Which gets expressed and disseminated in different ways. Una de las formas es through mestizaje, right? Through this idea, this rainbow people of Latinidad that erases everyone and blackness specifically. But I think it's also very important that to note that, like, yeah, we also sometimes have to carve out spaces in black spaces. Like, I've had that too. Like, when I've dated someone black, or when I've had any relationship with someone who's black, or when I've been in mostly African-American spaces, there's questions, but I feel like there's less questions. Like I came, so it's funny, my family lives in New York, we're Colombian, right? But we never lived in a Colombian area. We've always mostly lived in Puerto Rican or Dominican areas. So, like, and I think that my father experienced a lot of racism while he was in New York. Like, I can tell you the many times that a Dominican cab driver would say something in Spanish because they didn't think he spoke Spanish. And my dad would literally stop the car, I'm leaving the car. We would just walk out from the cab because of the racism that, you know, some racist comment that a Dominican driver or someone else would say. And but I've always found an interest, like, we only went to the Colombian areas to get like the things that we like. And then we came back. It's like, we're going to go hang out with the Boricas. So we're going to go hang out with the Quisqueyanos. And that's where we're going to be. And that's how we're going to roll. And I think I do think that there is an acceptance aspect, but it goes back to the anti-blackness, right? Because Latinidad has had such a big part of anti-blackness, because in popular television, you know, the only black person in a novela was the maid, right? Like, that's just what happened. In novelas, no one was starring, and like, none of our people were seen. So then why would I be seen? But then I watched Fresh Prince. Oh, Fresh Prince looks like my brother though. So I'm a go to that side. Whether I have to have questions of acceptance there's less questions of acceptance there than here. And I think that, especially in the US, right? And I think that's very interesting, because I do think, like everyone's hinting, there are different dynamics in different places. In Colombia, in Bogota, where I'm from, it was different, right? There's less black people in Bogota than, for example, in Chocó, when I'm in Tura, wherever. I'm sure it's different in Detroit, like Esperanza just said, than different it would be in New York, right? In Washington Heights. So I think all of these dynamics are interesting, because I think they get to understanding that Afro-Latinidad is a complex lived experience, but one that we can trace to many people, right? Like Ismael Miranda, where we're giving the name for the podcast, Arturo Afonso Schomburg, they're both black Boricuas who wanted to focus on blackness overall, right? Not just a localized blackness, but a more globalized blackness. And I think those are interesting things.
I think the thing is that we are here, we've been here, and we are at this point where we can name these systems, like Andres was saying, hey, this is, we are all suffering, we are all oppressed from these systems of white supremacy that lead us to be marginalized, to be forgotten, to be erased from countries and cultures where we built and we have part of, right? And our communities are not getting fed properly. We are not, you know, being fed properly. So I think we reach the point where you kind of get fed up and it's like, nah, y'all are gonna see us, because we, you know, I think what we are trying to do is pull up a chair. You know, we at the table, we're pulling up a chair, like, no, we belong here, right? Really empowering ourselves to take, I guess, kind of ownership of our own identity, of our roots, of our history, and being like, we deserve to be at this table, because not only am I Colombian because of where I was born, but I am part of a bigger diaspora. I am part of a bigger group of people. I think it's empowering to know that, you know, my ancestors really did free themselves and went on and built their own towns and did their own things. I think it's really cool to see us kind of coming out and taking up our space, that is rightfully ours to say. So like we've been saying the whole episode, this ain't nothing new. All we're doing is bringing a little bit more light into something that already is.
And I think that's the perfect way for us to end. Esto no es nuevo, esto es algo que lleva tiempo y que tenemos que continuar la conversación y hablando de esto, and talk about how it continues to be a thing in our communities that we kind of know exists, pero a la misma vez no queremos reconocer. And so I think what Nora just said is perfect. We've been here. And we need to talk about it, and we're gonna keep talking about it. So if you like this conversation, and if you're interested in what we're trying to do with this project, make sure to like, to comment, to subscribe to the podcast, to see what we're gonna drop. We're hoping to launch in January of 2022. So leave us your reviews, leave us your ideas. We're interested to hear what you think, what you would like for us to talk about. Y nos vemos la próxima.
Ciao.